Welcome to the Golden Age of Cardboard podcast, where we remember a time when stacks of cards were held together with rubber bands and Mickey Mantles were put in bike spokes. We hope you will enjoy and reminisce as you come along with us as we tell stories about the baseball cards from the Golden Age of Baseball. We will examine the state of the vintage baseball card market and talk to some of the greatest collectors in the hobby. You won't be hearing us talk about any chrome or shiny cards here. Now, to take you on this retrospective journey, here's your host, direct from the shallow end of the gene pool, my son, Mike Moynihan.
Yo, and hello, everybody. Mike here, and welcome to another episode of the Golden Age of Cardboard podcast, where we talk about a lot of things vintage. And, you know, usually on this show, I try to not talk about current events a whole lot. I want the episodes that I put out there to be kind of evergreen content. I want it to be stuff that no matter when you're watching it, you can go back and binge the show if you're new to the show, and it'll be stuff that's relevant to your collecting whenever you're listening to it. But this week, there's been some news in the last few weeks in the hobby that's been a pretty seismic bit of news in the hobby. And it's SGC getting bought by Collectors, which, if you don't know, Collectors is the parent company for PSA grading and a whole lot of other things. But they have bought SGC. And so that's a pretty big deal. And typically once a year, I have my guest on today who's going to be on, and we talk about grading and we talk about this stuff. And so we're going to discuss that a little bit, maybe some other state of the hobby kinds of things based on some things that are changing within the hobby, kind of what's going on now in early 2024. Let's bring him on, my fellow New York Knight, George Diamond Yard Sports Cards. George, welcome to the show again.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Glad to be on, as always. You know, we've talked about a lot of different things, different over the years here, you know, on your show. And thank you again for having me on. It's a great show, and I'm proud to be on it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And thank you for my New York Knights jersey. I should thank the Rangers for my New York Knights jersey, because since they won the World Series, you're from Arizona, I'm from Texas. We had a little bet going on, and this was an amazing gift, by the way, and I really do love it, and I appreciate it.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you liked it. I was disappointed the Diamondbacks lost, but at least we can unite in being Roy Hobbs fans.
That's right. And hey, kind of like you never, I went into the World Series going, I'm just happy to be in the world. I'd like to win, of course, but there's a lot of other teams that would like to say they were in the World Series, right?
Oh, yeah. I know they said that it was the lowest rated World Series maybe ever. I don't know. And I don't care, because you know what it tells me? It tells me that this game is legitimate. The best teams are winning. No referees are making critical calls and calling subjective penalties. It's like best teams are winning. And, you know, we made it to the National League champions, but the Rangers were the best team, obviously, in the series.
Yeah, it was fun. That literally, probably, and not literally, it was my best sports moment of my life, was when Josh Forrest struck out, who did he strike out? Ketel Marte or whoever he did in the game. Best sports moment of my life. Probably, maybe one of your worst, but I had two really bad. Y'all won back in 07?
2001, 9/11 year.
Okay, so that was the Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling year, right?
Yeah, that's when we beat the Yankees. What do you think of that, James? Lou Rock, what do you think about that?
So we hadn't won one, and it was nice to finally get that monkey off the back. But, you know, there's two kind of topics I want to talk about. Let's spend some time talking about this whole SGC. And so many people have done content about this. I've wanted intentionally, George, to wait a number of weeks to kind of let the dust settle on it, to not react to the news, maybe let some follow-up stuff come out. Peter, who is the president of SGC, came out with a video, basically said, yeah, things aren't changing. You know, things are staying the same. What was your first, if you remember a few weeks ago, what was your initial reaction to SGC being bought by collectors?
Disappointment for vintage collectors. That was my initial gut reaction, because SGC had been this kind of really advancing and alternative to PSA, and they had done a great job. They had done everything that you know, they were like PSA kind of used to be with their customer service way back, you know, I'm talking like 2010. But for the people who collect vintage, and especially pre-war, I was thinking, man, this is like, it's going to eventually, well, who knows what's going to happen. It's kind of was initial gut reaction was, oh no, for vintage collectors.
Yeah. I don't know if I was disappointed. I was surprised. I thought Fanatics might go after SGC, and we've now learned that Fanatics did indeed try to buy SGC, apparently. I can't even imagine how much money. SGC was privately owned. I've actually met the owner at the National last year, as a matter of fact. Seems like a great guy, quiet guy. I don't know the corporate structure of SGC, if he's by himself or if he's just the kind of figurehead for a group that owns SGC. I don't really know, but they had to make a mint, and I honestly don't blame them. We all have a number. Everybody says, oh, I would never sell out. Everything in here is for sale for the right number. I would sell everything tomorrow if you came at me with a number that made me have to get rid of it.
I understand that. But also it's interesting because collectors are all over the map, very eccentric. Some people are very eccentric. Some people are very opinionated. Collectors, though, like in general, seem to value from the collector's perspective, not the business perspective. They value loyalty. They value all these things. And I think they just kind of felt like, yeah, it was a sellout. And at the same time, we're all adults here. So we all realize that this has been what SGC has been working toward the entire time. They were never going to catch up and overtake PSA. It just wasn't going to happen. They had their niche with pre-war, with vintage collectors. They were expanding to Pokemon. They're expanding to modern, but they were never going to catch them. It's just that I think that the initial idea was that, you know, it was like, wow, you know, where are vintage collectors going to go to grade their cards if they don't want to go to PSA?
And all signs point to, for now, they keep sending them to SGC. You know, it feels like it's going to be collectors again as a conglomerate. So it has all of these independent companies working under the collector's umbrella. You just got to wonder how long it's kind of a typical story, right? You buy a company. This is the typical roadmap that happens. They let it kind of go for a while and watch, observe, you know, see, and then they're going to start cherry picking people, cherry picking ideas, and who knows where it ends up, but that's kind of the typical timeline. How long is that, you know, transition period going to be? 6 months, a year, indefinitely? We don't know, but as of now, you can still send your cards into SGC.
And that was what Peter, you know, I watched the video that Peter put out as well. And I got the feeling that's the intention. Everything is business as usual. We're just going to keep going. Nothing's going to change. And I realized that that's, you know, what we kind of want, what vintage collectors want. At the same time, you know, I don't know how this is all going to shake out. I'm just, you know, we're still pretty fresh from it too. And we won't know until there's some kind of definitive move from SGC or with collectors. But, you know, for right now, I mean, we have what we had before, you know, yeah. Same people running it, cards getting turned over in a fast time, you know, but we're all kind of theorizing about what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think it's the biggest hobby news since Fanatics bought Top. And I remember when that happened, people thought, well, that's the end of, you know, everything as we know it in the hobby, and it hasn't turned out to be that yet, right? Fanatics has done a good job so far as I can tell. I don't buy a whole lot of modern stuff, so it's not an area that I focus on a lot, but it feels like Fanatics just brings more money to the table, and I think that is true of SGC. It feels like PSA or collectors can bring maybe some enhancements to SGC and make it even better. That's my hope. I think I'm a little naive in that, or maybe a little rose-colored glasses hoping on hope. But, you know, having interviewed Nat Turner 6 weeks ago, I guess, he didn't say anything about it. I should have known something was up, though, because we were in negotiations for Chasing Cardboard to renew our sponsorship agreement with them. And it was like, hey, we'll get back to you, which they had always been so super responsive and really easy to work with. And we kept getting this delay and we were like, what's going on here? You know? Mm. And it's like, now with hindsight, it's very clear what was going on. This was all happening behind the scenes, probably been going on for months and months would be my guess. Certainly when I talked to Nat Turner 6 weeks ago, he would have known that was in the pipeline and probably near the ending stages of negotiation and working it all out. But he didn't say anything to me, which is probably smart. That's probably a good idea.
I don't think this is not something that they just wake up and decide they're going to do. They've been analyzing the numbers for a long time. They've been seeing how SGC has been gaining some market share. They're not losing any ground. They've been gaining ground. There are some channels that list like the amount of cards graded each month, and they have those numbers, and SGC keeps grading, you know, more and more cards, and PSA is grading more cards than SGC, but the percentages slightly are changing in sports cards. And so they were slowly becoming a modest threat, but it wasn't, you know, immediate. I wanted to just touch on what you talked about with Fanatics buying Topps. Like Fanatics buying Topps, to me, it affects the future. It doesn't affect like my collection, your collection at all. You know, the people that are invested, I mean, it affects the future of the kids or people who are in a modern, it affects all of that. But the reality of that is it's going to be what it is, right? There's nobody out there that's leveraged in a 2025 top set. But there are a bunch of us who are leveraged into, you know, different cards of different grading companies and different grades and things like that. So that's why we are all wondering, you know, how is this going to unfold? You know, some people collect exclusively PSA. And I was almost pretty much like that for up until about 4 years ago. And then I changed my opinion because I feel like they were doing a great job and they were advancing and they came out with a Tux holder. Their service was great. And they kept going during COVID when PSA shut down, and they won me over. And more than half the cards I bought in the last 3 years have been SGC cards.
Yeah, I think that they have been gaining a lot of momentum in the collector's mind. You know, in fact, I know plenty of collectors that are only SGC now. That's all they want to deal with because of the problems we've illustrated and talked about many times on this show and even today. What SGC is, PSA isn't. Fast, good customer service, easy to work with. You know, those are all transparent in a lot of different ways that PSA simply isn't. And those are attractive qualities, right? Those are things people want, that consumers want. They were competitive on price. They were all these things. And now it's like, okay, now what? So I have two questions to ask you. The first one I'll ask is, so I think we can all agree that Fanatics wants to own a grading company. Obviously, they tried to buy SGC. Do you think they're next to buy Beckett Grading? Do you think they're next in line? And that's what is that their target now?
I'm not sure. I know they want to get into the game. And the game has been, you know, PSA has essentially controlled it for a long time. You know, Beckett used to be number two. Now they're number three, and CGC is coming up, especially with Pokemon. I'm not sure. Yeah, I know Fanatics wants to cut out have their own grading company, cut out the middleman, issue already pre-graded cards, is my understanding, which is fine. But, you know, when you think about opening a pack of cards, isn't that, I guess you could open a pack of a card that's graded and do that, which I know some companies do already. I mean, do you think, Mike, I'm not throwing it back on you, but I don't really have an answer to that. I think they're going to have to go somewhere. And is Fanatics, you know, is Fanatics going to buy collectors? You know, who knows? Is Fanatics big enough
to buy oh my gosh, a huge purchase.
Well, this has crossed my mind. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that I don't know. I doubt seriously that in 2 years from now, that SGC brand and PSA brand are still going to be separate like they are now. I don't think that PSA bought SGC to just have it be the status quo. They have a plan, whatever that plan is. I'm sure it involves some kind of registry because they want people buying and grading as many cards as possible, whether with SGC or PSA. But, you know, is Collectors smaller than Fanatics? Does Fanatics have the pull to buy PSA and just lump this into one big grading company? I don't know. Is Beckett going to be, you know, it almost feels like with Beckett that they're just kind of getting left behind. And I know that they're good people over there and everything. And I just, and they're Texas company, but I just, you know, I don't know if Beckett is as much of a player, I guess in the modern world it is with a lot of the, with a black label and things like that, that people are pursuing. But, you know, most of the time it's going to be SGC or PSA and vintage cards.
Yeah, for sure. The whole Fanatics buying Collectors never even hasn't even crossed my mind until you just said it. And that would surprise me a lot.
Is Nat Turner has been his group Collectors has been purchasing all these different arms of things, right? Right. They purchased Golden. They purchased WADA, the video Gentiment. Game.
Yeah.
They purchased Gentiment. So they're acquiring all these things to make
Card Ladder. Bought Card Ladder. Yeah.
So making them more desirable eventually to a larger company to come in and take them over. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I don't have any insider information. I'm just theorizing about, you know, what the next steps are, because they're always, everybody is looking for growth. They're not looking for the status quo. Business people are not looking for the status quo.
Yeah. Maybe Jeff Bezos is just going to buy all of it and then we won't worry about it. You know, I do think that there, if you look at the two companies and you think, you take out all the service elements in terms of customer service like that. If you just think about the end result of what you get in your hand, they're two very different things. I would say that the grading is subjective on in both companies. Sometimes you're going to get a grader that's a little harder than others, no matter which company you go to. And so that's obviously incredibly subjective. And sometimes it works out well, sometimes not so much. But the different slabs, the way the Tux looks and the way a PSA slab looks, it's incredibly different. Do you have both close by just to compare and contrast the two?
Sure.
I know you have them because we just shot
some good stuff.
Rod Carew cards that you whooped my
butt. Yeah, there's a Carew and an 8.
Yeah.
New holder.
Yeah.
And then there's a 68 Carew and a 6.5 SGC holder.
And you aesthetically, and it's maybe because I'm just old school. I like the PSA look better. It feels cleaner to me. But so many people love the Tux. I get it.
Yeah. I mean, they both look good to me. I used to be pretty much 99% PSA guy. But the Tux to me just doesn't look good on 71 tops, baseball, 62 tops, football, anything with a black border. It doesn't really look as good, but I just think in general though, the Tux is great. It looks great. You know, they both have done a great job. These companies have done a great job. I do not like the Beckett slab. It's unwieldy. It's big. It's okay. It's not smooth. Like the edges of these are smooth, right? And yeah, it's like angular, like you literally could harm somebody with it. So I prefer these slabs, both of them, better than Beckett.
Modern martial arts guys are debating whether or not to use ninja stars or Beckett slabs to hurl at other people. So that's how angular the Beckett slabs are.
Well, yeah, and they're actually way more robust. They're harder to break. The SGC slabs are relatively fragile, frankly, in my opinion, and easy to snap if you want to talk about that. But they're a little bit more fragile, I think, than the PSA slabs. But Beckett, if you were like really wanting to protect your card, Beckett's probably the best slab to do that, and it's the least aesthetically pleasing.
So the oncoming danger that I see down the road for SGC fans is if PSA comes in and again, raids them for all the good stuff and leaves the crap. And I don't know what the crap would be, but just the idea that if they absorb SGC into the fold and make it all one company, is that really going to help PSA get better, or will it just make SGC worse? And the answer is worse. I think maybe they're trying to, we're going to have a facility now in Florida. That makes some sense to geographically start spreading out the, where you submit and have other facilities, but they could have just built one. Like, I don't know what you need SGC for. I'm trying to think, what's the benefit to PSA or to collectors? We keep saying PSA. Collectors is the company that bought them. They also own PSA. So, yeah. But what's the benefit to collectors to buy SGC when they are such a small portion? What's in it for them? That's where, because you said there's a plan, and there absolutely is a plan. What could
I
think?
I have a theory. PSA. Okay. Think about the cards that are in SGC holders.
Yeah.
What kinds of cards are they? What are
pre-war or in SGC or a bunch of pre-war and vintage? Yeah. Pre-war.
Okay. So you don't see a ton of Shohei Ohtani rookies in SGC holders.
Right.
You don't see a ton of 86 Fleer Michael Jordans in SGC holders or Ricky Henderson rookies in SGC holders. But you see a good percentage. I'm not saying a majority. You see a good percentage of the most iconic, expensive cards in the hobby are in SGC holders. And so PSA wants every card to be in their, I would think, in their holder, unless they're making another brand, and SGC is going to be the BCCG going forward of their better brand. PSA has always thought that their brand is superior. Every company is supposed to think that, right? Your brand is superior. It's like when you go cross stuff from SGC to PSA, et cetera, and it's like they're just tougher if you submit it in the holder. So PSA thinks that, they have a lot of pride in their brand. Our PSA 10 is superior to your SGC 10. This has kind of been the thought, I think, on their end, respectfully to SGC. But the reason that they want SGC, I believe, is because you have a lot of the greatest cards in the hobby, and all the old money, a lot of the money in the hobby is in old baseball cards. It's kind of like the Great Gatsby, where you have the new money and the old money. There's a lot of big time new money in basketball, modern basketball, or even, vintage basketball, which I guess would be 60s and 70s. But I was running some numbers before we got on here about different cards and the percentage of cards graded of iconic cards by SGC and PSA. And I just feel like there are a lot of SGC has a larger market share in pre-war. And as you go deeper into that, they have a larger market share in some of the greatest sets of all time, the T206 set, a lot of the confectionery issues of the turn of the century, 1999 Philadelphia Caramel, things like that. And they have a lot of SGC slabs and Cracker Jack, 1914, 1915. And so the market share of SGC slabs out there is closer to the amount of PSA slabs. But if you go down the go more toward like a 54 Aaron, you know, I have the numbers here. I could tell them to you, but I did this research. And then the further up you go, you know, until you get to like Shohei Ohtani, and 91% of US one Shohei Ohtani tops updates, 91% are in PSA slabs of the PSA and SGC population. 91%. Right. So there's not really a big market right now for SGC slabs of modern cards. I'm not saying I grade them too. I grade modern cards with SGC too. But the money in the hobby and the slabs are in pre-war, and those are a lot of what SGC has. So you're not just buying SGC and their operations. You know, you're buying the brand, and you're buying these, you know, not buying us collectors, but you're you know, that's, you know, you have a brand, and PSA is like, you know, this Rod Caruso in a PSA 10, but, you know, I might have a pre-war card. It's in an SGC 2, and that pre-war card might be like 200 times more valuable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if they can get the pre-war collector, or the vintage collector, to try to like cross their cards over or something like that, encourage them to do that, they can make more money. They can regrade the cards that were already graded if they want to do that. I'm just spitballing here, but yeah, that's kind of my thought is, and I'm just going to, if you don't mind me just kind of talking here a little bit more, I'll give you the percents. 83% of the 80 tops Ricky Hendersons between PSA and SGC, 83% are in PSA holders. But when you go down to 54 Aaron and 52 tops Mantle, between the two, 75% are in PSA holders. When you get down to a 1914 Cracker Jack Joe Jackson, only 65% are in SGC holders. When you get to a Red Portrait Ty Cobb, only 62% are in SGC holders.
You mean PSA holders?
I'm sorry, PSA holders. Yeah. And when you get to like a 1909 E95 Philadelphia Commerce Honus Wagner, 51% are in PSA holders. So what I'm saying is here, when you get closer to pre-war, they have less of a market share of what has already been graded. And so I think that's just that's just what I observed. And kind of like when you buy the SGC brand, you're buying a stake in all these collectors who have these cards.
Why would they care about cards? And I'm just going to think out loud. Why would they care about what's already been graded? They want to own what's going to be graded. And I think by owning both companies, now they're going to control 90 something percent of the entire grading market, right?
Well, but like in the vintage world, which SGC is the one who has, SGC is primarily, you know, we've discussed, it's primarily vintage. There are not a whole lot of, there are vintage cards that are going to be graded, but there's not a whole lot of 1914 Cracker Jack Joe Jacksons that are going to be graded. There's not a whole lot more, many more green cobs that are going to be graded. You know, there's not that many black swamp finds that are going to happen. So they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do to try to have an SGC/PSA registry. They're going to have to figure out how they're going to address these two different slabs. You know, and I hope they listen to the collectors on this and what they want to do, because that's what I'm saying. It's like, do you just say, okay, we're just going to keep it as it is. We're two companies in the same world, just kind of going on parallel roads at different rates. And do we just live like this for the next 10 years and we make a universal registry with PSA and SGC? I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are going to say, who have like a 52 Mantle and a PSA 8, and they're going to say, oh, the SGC 8's inferior. It's not worth as many points because the grading is not as hard. And there's SGC fans that are going to say, that's not true. You know, so I hope that kind of answers a little bit of your question. But I mean, there's not a whole lot of more vintage. There's not many more vintage cards that are going to be graded. I mean, maybe in the 50s and the 60s and 70s, but that's not a percentage of the slabs that are out there that are SGC slabs.
Yeah. I just saw a mother load of vintage a week and a half ago. I went down and, you know, a guy had a dozen Carl Yastrzemski rookies and, you know, multiples of all these great cards. And I'm like, holy, you know, there's a ton of them still out there that are not graded. Mm-hmm. But I think you're hitting on something on the periphery that kind of perplexes me as to why it could be a motivating factor. But the idea of the universal registry that I've talked about before, Universal Pop Reports, right? You can, but you could do that now. Again, if somebody wanted to spend $1 million to develop the technology, you could create a universal set registry and charge a fee and make a mint. It's just not going to be me. I've said that before, but universal set registry, universal pop reports, I think are also valuable to the collectors. Again, you could aggregate that data now. They're just going to be able to do it a lot more efficiently and seamlessly. And I think that going forward, I think when they have the universal set registry, at least with PSA and SGC, they're going to start charging a monthly subscription to be a part of the registry. I don't think it will be a free service anymore. And to me, that is a cash cow waiting to be milked, so to speak. They're going to milk us all for, you know, all these pricing. You know, you're going to have all the pricing data from card ladder, because now you got card ladder, right? You got pricing data. You've got both major 90 something percent of all the slabs, right? In now you can get data on all of those. You can put them together. We're going to charge you for this service going forward, which makes me sad, by the way, but I can see that coming down the road, and I'll be one of the suckers that probably buys a subscription to that deal, because I love the registries. I love the checklisting of that, all the different things that I've talked about ad nauseum on this channel. Why I do that. It would make me, honestly, if they did that, it'd make me more likely to buy SGC slabs and use SGC. So maybe we know how to make SGC better, and that's include them in our little game of the set registry. Mm-hmm. So we can buy SGC now at a discount because they're so small relative to us. Mm-hmm. But we know the way to unlock the key to collectors is to make it available on our registry, and people will start sending gobs and gobs more cards over to SGC because of they like the tux or they don't care. I actually don't like the Frankenstein collection, period, just aesthetically. So I'll be less inclined to do that, but I would be at least more open-minded to buying SGC cards and or grading with SGC if it's all together in one place from an inventory slash tracking, all those types of things.
Yeah, I mean, I know so many people like you who I respect, and they are collect all kinds of stuff, and they love the registry. And I have a friend, he collects Clemente, and I think he's number 4 on the Clemente Master Registry. And it's like, you know, and the Clemente item comes up, he doesn't have, he buys it. Now that's Clemente, but you know, that's been the problem. And I think we've discussed this before on your channel about the fact that SGC has no registry. So there's no incentive, even if you have the nicest quality, like 1964 Topps cards, because there's no registry, there's no incentive to grade any of those cards with SGC, because unless it's a Hall of Famer, right? Or you love the card for some reason. But common, there's no incentive to grade commons. I went through this myself personally with a bunch of high grade 62 to 66 commons from this collection. And PSA was closed. And I was like, I sent a few of them SGC and they graded like 8.5s and I couldn't sell them. Because people are like, well, I'm doing the register PSA registry, so you know I would have to snap that out and then resubmit it to PSA. And you know, okay, you know, that's, you know, there's people who say collect the card, not the grade. There's people who say don't collect the slab, collect card. But then at the end of the day, there's other people who are like, I'm doing the registry set for 1964 Topps, and I need to do that. I need these 7 cards, and it's important to them. And they've PSA has just it's done an amazing job of being able to sell cards that make desirable cards that maybe were not traditionally desirable, you know? And you know, with a set collector, especially, and they, I mean, they have awards for it, you know, and I'm not poo-pooing it. It's genius. And SGC has been left out in the cold with that. And now maybe there's gotta be something. This is a major way that PSA can appeal to the SGC collectors by having some kind of registry, whether it's a combined registry, a universal registry. I mean, PSA might even say, send your SGC slabs in and we'll evaluate them to see if they'll cross the PSA for a small price. You know, They might make it. They might say, listen, if the card is, if it's a bulk service for $5, we'll evaluate it and reslab it. And you can see if your card, it's a PSA or SGC 8 is a PSA 8. And depending on the value of the card, I don't know what they're going to do about this, but that registry is a big deal. And again, many of the greatest collectors in the hobby love the registry, and they, you know, their collectors are, again, some of them are OCD, some of, you know, it's just the way we are.
Well, before I want to move on to another topic for the other half of this episode, but I want to conclude with grading still is not dead. Like, if anybody thinks that grading's now going to be undesirable and nobody's going to send any cards in, I think that's a bunch of hooey.
Grading saved the hobby.
Yeah.
I mean, the hobby was like in nowhere land in the 1990s. People were buying stuff and buying, you know, boxes and inserts and stuff. But, you know, grading is the reason that, like, it gave us another way to, like, appreciate the hobby and the high grade cards. And if you're of our generation, you understood that the cards that were in mint condition were more valuable than the cards that were in near mint condition. If you were a kid who grew up in the 60s, maybe you didn't care. But I just remember that condition being important. And, you know, the registry, grading, the different companies. I mean, and now it's at a fever pitch. I mean, I know people say that the hobby is kind of, oh, you know, we'll see what happens in the new year. The boom has passed. I was at two shows in the last 3 or 4 weeks. I was at Burbank in Ontario, and it was packed. Like, I did better than I've done at any show there. You know, I had some tables. And then I was just at this Front Row show in Phoenix. It was packed. And next week we have the Convention Center show. And you have Dallas, right?
Dallas is this week, yeah.
Yeah, and you're going to see. People are still collecting. They're out there, and all ages, which is great. They're out there, and, you know, and kids making deals, 12-year-olds making deals. And, yeah, and that's great.
12-year-olds with better collections than me. I love it. Or at least more money in their cards. All right. Speaking of the hobby and money, one person who I buy from often is Probstein123 on eBay. One of the biggest sellers, if you know, I think between probably Probstein and Four Sharp Corners, those are probably the two biggest card sellers on eBay. And we haven't talked about this, but you said you talked to Rick Probstein, did an interview with him.
I watched an interview with him.
You watched an interview. What were some of the takeaways that you got from watching that that makes you think different, or what comes to mind takeaways from that?
Well, I think that he's, I've been buying cards on and off from him for years. And, you know, it's a well-oiled machine over there. They don't do a lot of descriptions. I mean, if they do a description, it says, and I've sold stuff with them too. If they do a description that says, like, you know, PSA 10, Rod Carew, 1981, or PSA 9, undergraded, that you'll get one word. I mean, they're very efficient. But what I got from the interview was, it was the tagline of the interview was eBay getting rid of buy it now. And I was like, what? And it's an interview with Rick Probstein. So I found that he was a very savvy business guy. He's been doing this for a long time. He's a tremendous collector, and he has massive personal collection of items. But he's been setting up at shows since he was very young and made a lot of money at a very young age, just by being ambitious and hustling. And he's kind of carried that into his business. I think he says 30 employees, he said, and they're the biggest seller on eBay. They're from what he says. And I believe that. So ever since he basically said PWCC went off eBay, they've been the biggest seller. But I guess he was saying that there's going to be more cards. He said there's a lot of inflated cards right now on eBay. There's a lot of people who just list stuff and for ridiculous prices, and that eBay themselves they're getting frustrated with this. And they're just basically taking up real estate on eBay with these ridiculous prices. And you and I know this. You know, somebody's got a 1950 Bowman Jackie Robinson and a PSA 2 that should be a $200 to $2,500 card if it's nice. And they've got like $7,000 on it. And so he has clients that are in the same boat. And he's basically told them, we're going to get rid of all the buy it nows. And they're going to be just basically, we'll run it for a reasonable price. If it doesn't sell, we'll lower it 10% and run it again. And then lower it 10% and run it again. He's like, we got too much. There's not enough real estate in our company and on eBay here for them to tolerate just cars just sitting there being overpriced. So that's what he was kind of saying, that because he meets, I guess, with being the biggest seller on eBay, he has their ear to some degree about their management and their planning. And so I don't know if buy it now is going to go away, but he thinks it's being abused, frankly, is my impression, by people who are just putting up cars for outrageous amounts of money.
Well, there's two things with that just immediately come to mind. Number one, it frustrates the piss out of me when you're searching for a card and it, you know, you see these exorbitant buy it nows and you're like, well, that's ridiculous. And you go look and the last auction was, you know, a third or, you know, a tenth of what this guy or girl has it listed for. And it muddies the waters a lot in terms of comps, which is, you know, and then when you're buying something and you go to a dealer or people that just don't know about cards, maybe we've encountered this with Chasing Cardboard, you know, we'll go in and if somebody will have inherited a family member's collection and it's great, you know, a graded card, and they go look, well, this person's selling it for $1,000. And you're like, yeah, but it sold that same card in the same grade sold last week for $20. And I'm using an extreme example that's not probably likely true, but just this idea that anybody can ask for whatever they want. That doesn't mean they're going to get it. You need to look at sold listings, and having to educate people on that difference and why it's so critical is frustrating. And I get so tired of seeing the endless, it makes so much sense for eBay to say, look, how many quote unquote dormant listings do they have? These listings that are on perpetual renewal every time 30 days or however long, and it just renews at the same price. It just sits out there collecting dust, you know, metaphysically speaking, on the interweb, it's collecting, you know, just nobody's interested in it. Nobody's going to buy it for that. Why on earth do they have it that way? And I don't know if it's, as a seller, you're thinking, well, there's going to be one sucker that might want to pay this for that card, when we all know that anybody with any common sense and any eBay, you know, you might do that once and get burned, and then you learn real quick how the game is played. And so it's that makes some sense that eBay would potentially think about eliminating the buy it now option completely.
Well, yeah, and for him, he was basically saying this is like just a waste of our energy. Like, we are spending energy relisting these cards or whatever we're doing, and these sellers really don't want to sell them. So if you don't want to sell them, why do you have them with me? Which makes complete sense. It's like going to a show, and I encounter this a lot. You go to a show and somebody has some nice vintage out and it's horribly overpriced. And you're like, well, if you have a Burke Ross Willie Mays, it's like a PSA 6 and you've got $11,000 on it, we can't go anywhere from there. Like, right. If I were to say $5,000 to you, you're going to be insulted because I just gave you 45% or whatever offer. But that's the real comp, if to use the word comps. But it's like you see a lot of people, these shows, who have unreasonable prices, and you see them on eBay, you see them at the show, and then you'll have people come up to you and say, well, that guy has a Jackie Robinson, he's selling it for $3,000. And you're like, and here you go, you're going to have to start breaking hearts again, you know, telling them the truth. This guy has this on eBay for whatever. And it's not real. The comps are what it sold for. Here, let me show I all time here. Let me show you VCP. It's a pay service that that dealers use. And they're like, well, that's not right. He had it for 300 and you're telling me it's only selling for 100. Yes, it's only selling for 100. I'll give you $65. Right. And I'm probably stretching. So this kind of thought, if just, you know, you're breaking people's hearts, whether they're 12 or they're 85 years old. You know, you're just telling them the truth. And so, you know, the more that you do shows, you're doing Chasing Cardboard, the more you're just having to educate people. And it's a lot of the same kind of requests. And, you know, but that this kind of thing, though, is if it's affecting Probstein, who's the biggest seller on eBay, you know, we need to start thinking about that, because at some point eBay is going to, you know, I'm not saying they're going to come to me with my 180 listings or whatever and tell me, hey, you got to take this stuff off or lower the price. But I mean, if he's seeing that things are inflated like that, then that's probably the truth.
I consider eBay to be the bastion of true pricing of cards. And what I mean by that is there's no better mechanism to determine the true value of a certain card. It has got the most eyeballs on it without question. And if a PSA 9 XYZ card sells for $20, it's worth $20 because everybody that would be interested in that card is looking for it. In all fairness, I've had, unfortunately, with one, I think the way they could get rid of buy it nows is extend auction periods for to 14 days or 21 days. And because I don't look at eBay every day for every card that I need. And so what I ultimately end up doing, I have a lot of saved searches now. I've started using that feature to help me find cards that I might not look at every day. And that's been beneficial. But the reality is I don't look all the time. And so if you give me a little more time, I'll eventually hunt for that card. And I've gone to sold when I see a card, an unusual card, a 81 tops Jim Cott, for example, you know, a card you just don't see graded very often. I don't look for that every day. But when I do and I go to sold and I'm like, oh, one sold, a PSA 8 sold for $12. I would have so paid more than that. You know, I see that a lot. Deals getting done, people getting good deals on cards I would pay a lot more money for. But I'm not going to pay $80 for a buy it now for a PSA 8. You know, that's the difference that you see is someone will have one listed for some crazy price. And I know the auctions are 12. The last one went for 12. I would pay 25, but I'm not paying 80, you know? And so if they extended that time on the auctions, I'd be able to find, you know, have more opportunity to bid on a card in an auction setting. But to me, it's the most pure capitalistic. If you want it, bid on it. You know, I love, because bidding wars are a real thing, and I love watching a card that I'm interested in and it'll go for a price, and then I go look and there's a buy it now and the same card, same grade for cheaper, and I just laugh. You know, then I just go, what idiot didn't just do a search, you know, and look for a, and then I'll go buy the buy it now or whatever if it's a good deal. So, but to me I think eBay is great for the hobby because it gives an outlet for anyone to sell cards, whether through a consigner pro. You might go, hey, I'm going to use ProbeScene because even though I'm going to give them a cut, it's still, they're going to get the most eyeballs because people follow that auctions, their auctions more religiously than just searching eBay like myself. So it's kind of the last. It tells you the true price of a card to me. eBay does.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great, you can reach so many people. You know, you can list cards. It's like, it's weird. Cards will sell. And I do a lot of buy it nows, and people buy a lot of my buy it nows because I'm not trying to gouge people. You know, it's like when you go to shows and people are like buying stuff from you and we just doing transactions. I'm like, I'm here to sell cards. I'm not here to like, hey, look at my case. You know, no, I keep my stuff. I want to keep at home, and the stuff I take to the show, I want to sell it. And I'm not there, you know, to not sell cards. So eBay though. Yeah. It's a lot of cards are eBay cards too. You know, they need to reach a certain buyer, certain special buyer. You know, whether it's a modern, you know, whether it's a Webinyama and it's numbered or whatever, or it's, you know, 76 batting leaders with Rod Carew and Thurman Munson, you can reach so many people. And so, I don't have a problem with it. I was telling you earlier today about shipping problems I've had since I've gone. They've gone to, what is it? Ground Advantage shipping. And just a little tip for everybody, drop your cards to the post office and get a scan on the cards if you're selling cards. Because I've had twice in the last month where the card was dropped off, not at the post office, but in a mailbox, and it wasn't scanned in. And it took a month to get there. And then it was just all of a sudden delivered. No in-between tracking. Just a couple thoughts.
Well, lots of cool. I mean, again, change is going to happen in the hobby. You and I have been around so long. We've seen a lot of changes, and you just kind of roll with it, and things end up, you know, sometimes you like stuff, sometimes you don't. Overall, it's still the greatest hobby in the world, and I love being a part of it and part of the community and all the things that come with collecting sports cards. And I know you do too, George. So thanks so much for coming on today and talking through these different things, and really appreciate your perspective.
Hey, I appreciate it, Mike. And I will say one last thing. I mean, you know, when you think about where SGC was 10 years ago, even if they got bought, they got purchased by PSA now or collectors, I still like where they're at now better than I did 10 years ago, for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just got to stay positive about it. It's going to happen, and just keep collecting what you love and meeting great friends like yourself. So thanks for having me on.
Great point. And with that, we'll sign off. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for watching. We'll talk to you soon next week for another episode. Keep collecting.